Howdy, folks.
Yes, it is your old friend Singing Sam. So let's just settle back and reminisce a bit. What do you say, huh?
With a nostalgic nod toward the Atwater Kent, we now present Same Time, Same Station, a chronicle of broadcasting's first half century.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
Tonight, our Obler Omnibus continues. Our three-part study of Arch Obler is named after his book, now available in paperback by Leisure Books. It contains texts of 14 Obler plays, plus penetrating commentary on the stars, networks, and sponsors who originally put them on the air. And speaking of penetrating commentary, here once again is Arch Obler.
The name of the series was Arch Obler's Plays. It had some peculiar results, that listing, Arch Obler's Plays, because sometimes the newspaper would get a little wrong. I remember the program that Joan Crawford did for me was kind of sensational. It was a pregnant woman. Her thoughts, considering bringing a baby into the world at that time. This was very daring, a pregnant woman thinking, you know. And the listing came out in New York paper in a banner headline, Arch Obler's Baby with Joan Crawford. My wife didn't appreciate that. The network kept it sustaining for prestige purposes. But finally along came a sponsor, and was almost too much for me to bear. I'd been accustomed to the very small money of the sustaining program. A very gifted musician by the name of Gordon Jenkins, who you remember from Manhattan Towers and other things, did the music for me in all my shows. Sustaining and commercial. We had a great association because he sort of knew the kind of music I wanted by ESP. It's a fact. When I went to make motion pictures and had long, wearisome sessions with musicians in order to get the music or composers, I began to remember with great nostalgia Gordon Jenkins, where I'd pick up a telephone and say, Gordon, this is a rocket ship returning from the first expedition to the moon, and it should be kind of aspiring music, and so on and so on. And I meet him then for the broadcast. It'll be absolutely perfect. We had no conflict in those areas. So I went commercial for Procter & Gamble. A soap commercial for Arch Obler. It was wrong from the beginning. In those days, there were no detergents, but they were needed badly to expunge my bad language in the control rooms when the interference began from the sponsors. And not from Mr. Gamble or Mr. Proctor, but rather from the usual source, the advertising agency contact man who was trying to make an impression to the visiting fireman from wherever Procter & Gamble have to be. And I wasn't accustomed to wearing anybody's collar or being told how, because I was naive enough then and naive enough now to think that the best things are done not out of committee, but out of the heart and mind of a creator.
Arch Obler's Plays. A Story in the Night.
I had a wife. I have no wife. I had a son. I have no son. I had a house. I have no house. When a
man's 55, I guess it's time to add up what he's got, eh? Well, there, I've told you. Three things I had. Wife, son, and house. I haven't got them anymore.
Dead?
Why did you just ask me? How did they die? No, they're not dead. Yeah, I know. Places all over the world where quicker than a man can think bombs come smashing through the air and there's no wife or kids or home, I know. But it wasn't that way with me. There doesn't have to be a war for a man to lose everything he's had. There are things that happen to a man while everything around seems to be peaceful and quiet and sure. Yeah, sure as money in a bank. Or does that make you laugh? I was a machinist. Yeah, and a good one. Not good all of a sudden. That kind of stuff takes time, but good the way a man gets good at something when he starts when he's a kid and works until his hands kind of think just by themselves. Yeah, that's the way I was down at the plant. Not just shooting off my mouth, you understand. I was good. Come a job that was just a little bit off the way, and the foreman would call me over and say...
Hey, Stuart, you take this job over.
Funny? As if I can hear him in my head right now.
Hey, Stuart, you take this job over.
Well, why shouldn't I hear it? Heard it for 30 years. Yeah, for 30 years, I tell you. Same plant, same job. And that was all right. When a man knows what he's going to do day in, day out, week in, week out. When a man knows there's a pay envelope waiting for him, he can get married and buy a house and have a kid. So that's what I did. Wife, kid, house. Let me tell you about my wife, Ella. Now, why should I tell you? You want something like in the movies, full of smart talk and Zam and Zowie, but there's nothing like that in my story about Ella. No better, no worse, I suppose, than the other guy's wife. A woman. Kind of cute when we first got married, but she was kind of a worrier, and after a while, it began to show in her face, and pretty soon she wasn't exactly what you'd call a picture. But we got along fine. I mean, no better, no worse than most married people, just like it.
Vacation, Jim? Why do we have to go running off someplace on a vacation? What's wrong with staying right here and taking our money and buying that lot? And so what if it gets hot? We'll stay in the house and keep cool. Waste a couple of $100 that we could invest. Oh, go on with you, Jim Stewart. Do you think you're a kid again? Yeah, it's a nice night. So sit quiet and I'll get you some lemonade. You'd think you and me were 18 again or something.
Yeah, we got along fine. No better, no worse than most married people just like us. My kid, Harry? Well, pretty cute when he was little, but the older he got, well, the cuteness goes out of even the best of them pretty quick, don't it? He was no better, no worse than most kids. No better, no worse.
It's only $10, Pa, only $10. I try to get a job, Pa. Believe me, I try. I can't get a break, that's all. Nobody will give me a break. The way I look at the world conditions is like this. The only way to get someplace is to have the dough, and there's nobody handing that out. You got to get a break somehow. It's only $25, Pa, only $25. Hey, Pa, I'll make it up to you sometime.
Yeah, Harry was no better or worse than most kids. He went to school up to about the second or... was it the third year of high school? And then, well, he just didn't want to go anymore. I had a lathe fixed up down in the basement, and ever since he was a little fella, I showed him how to work it. And Well, by the time he quit school, he was a pretty good mechanic. So, he started out to get a job. But you know how things were. Wasn't much doing, and pretty soon he didn't try much anymore. But he was all right. Never much trouble until he got himself married to that girl, Bertha. Big, hefty, blonde, and nothing much else. But you know how kids are, so he married her and moved right in with us. Well, after a time, I got used to her and even sort of liked her. Yeah, you get used to anything after a while.
I just don't feel good, Harry. I never feel good. Do you think I'm lying around because I want her? Trouble with this whole family is nobody understands me. I don't lie around because I want her. I just don't feel good. Hand me that magazine, will you? What's playing at this show tonight? I don't lie around because I want it. It's just because I don't feel good.
Well,
hand me the magazine.
She was what you'd call a mess, that wife of Harry's, but he liked her, and so that was that. Are you waiting for something exciting to happen? One of them movie villains in blood? There's blood in this story. But it doesn't come real quick. It's slow. As slow as things sometimes happen to a man. Let's see, what did I just tell? Oh, yeah, about the kid. Well, now I'll tell you about my job. Every morning for 30 years, into the mill, machines roaring away so loud, pretty soon you didn't notice them. Work well. Stop for lunch, eat it out of the same old tin lunchbox. Whistle blew, back to work. Work till 5:30, and then back to the house and supper. Day after day for 30 years. 6 days a week it was at first, and then it was 5, but all the days just like the other ones, but that was all right. A man likes to know what he's got to do, and it was a job. A good job. Yes, sir. The company treated me swell. A couple of weeks vacation every year with pay, and when times was slack, well, they kept me right on. Yes, sir. Every week a paycheck. Of course, I worked hard for it, but they paid off, and that was that. Yes, sir. A good job. So, there you have it. Took me a long time to tell it all to you, but when a man's telling over 50 years of his life, I guess doing it in a couple of minutes is pretty good. There I was, sitting mighty pretty. A wife, a kid, and a good job. Mighty pretty. Just as pretty as maybe you're sitting. Then, one day it wasn't so pretty. Old factory whistle was blasting away, and then all of a sudden, it quit. It kept on blowing for the rest, but it quit for me.
Come in, Jim. Come in. Shut the door. Come in. The foreman said you wanted to see me, boss.
That's right, Jim. That's right. Want to see you. Sit down.
Well, thanks, Mr. Butler, but I'd better get back. I mean, that job lot...
Take it easy, Jim. Take it easy. Got to tell you something, and since you want to make it quick, well, it might as well be quick. Jim, you're getting the blue slip Saturday.
Blue slip?
Yeah, telling you today so you can sort of look around during your lunch hour. Fair with you? That's what I want to be, fair with you.
Mr. Butler, you're having fun with me.
Fun?
Blue slip? For a minute I thought...
Don't like to do it, but I get my orders from upstairs. Don't like to do it, but there it is.
You mean you're firing me?
Well, call it laying off.
But that can't be. Why, it's 30 years next month I've been here.
Now, Jim, be a man about it. Be a man about it. Cutting down the job crew for a while, and that's all there is to it. I get my orders from upstairs. I got to carry them out. Got to carry them out.
Mister, you got any idea what it is to lose a job? No, not to lose it, to have it taken away from you? Taken away and leave you hanging there in the middle of the air as if they took the ground from beneath your feet, the ground that had been there for 30 years and now no more? You walk out of the boss's office and you start back toward the machine, but all at once, you can't go back. Air, you gotta have air. You go outside, and the world's the same, and yet you know it isn't all the same. You haven't got a job. When I started this story, I promised you blood, didn't I? Well, there it was. I don't know how to say it, but there it was. A whole trail of it dripping out of my heart between the factory and the house. When I walked home to tell him I didn't have a job.
Excuse me for laughing. It's a funny time to laugh, ain't it? But, you know, I just remembered something funny. Yeah, something funny that happened that day. On my way home, I mean. As I got near the house, I began to laugh. Yeah, just as I did now. And you want to know why I laughed? It was because I suddenly remembered that, all right, I didn't have a job, but I still had my two hands and my wife and my kid and my house. And I was strong and healthy, and my hands remembered all I had to do. Oh, I'd been behind that one machine much too long. A new job, a new machine, new work. Yeah, it was high time that I did. My wife and kid would back me up, and that, so I felt good. Real good.
You say you lost your job, Jim?
Ella couldn't believe it. At first.
Oh, you mean to say you lost your job?
And Harry couldn't believe it either. At first. Nothing to worry about, I told him. Nothing to worry about. I'm the best dad-busted machinist in town. There's nothing to worry about. Pick me up a job as easy as that.
Sorry, mister. You're too old for us.
Hear that?
Sorry, mister. You're too old for us.
Yeah. Here comes the villain.
Sorry, mister. You're too old for us.
Turned out to be a regular movie piece, didn't it? First blood, and here's the villain.
Sorry, mister. Too old for us.
Got it, didn't you? Too old. Me. At first, I said they're nuts, crazy. Me, Jim Stewart. Why, my hands could turn out better work than they could 10, 15 years ago.
Sorry, mister. You're too old for us. Sorry, mister. You're too old for us. Sorry, mister.
Hands didn't get a chance to prove it.
Sorry, mister.
Had to handle them pencils, marking ads and papers, filling applications out of cheesy little agencies, but working at the lathe.
Sorry, mister.
Ah, my hands didn't get a chance at that.
You're too old for us.
Sorry, mister. You're too old for us. Sorry, mister. You're too old for us. Sorry, mister. You're too old for us. Blood and a villain. And now I can give you a little real fast-moving excitement. Call it the chase. Yeah, the chase, like in the movies, only here it's not the cops going after the gangsters, but things, yeah, better call it life, sort of catching up to me. The days started crawling. You think days can't crawl? Well, mister, if you've ever been out of work, then you'd know this. You open up your eyes in the morning and you think, another day. Well, it'll be over soon enough, but it isn't. The hours stretch and stretch, with each one saying,
out of work. You're no good.
Out of work.
You're no good.
Out of work.
Pretty soon you forget everything else.
Out of work.
But having something to do and something to look forward to every day and putting out good work and the men around you knowing it and having the money in your pocket that you want and being part of something and everything else like that, you forget everything.
Out of
Yeah.
Out of work.
But you can't forget.
Out of work. You're no good.
Out of work.
You're no good.
Out of work.
You're no good. Out of work.
Well, pretty soon there was a new worry. Money. Right about here, if this was one of those Hollywood movies, I guess there'd be one of those, morals. I mean, somebody'd say,
why didn't you save your money when you were young, man?
Save money? You work hard and you never make more than 45 a week tops, and you pay your bills regular, so what can you save? But what I saved, sure, a house, a couple of corner lots, but
Oh, mister, when you're out of work, it don't take long.
Real estate loan?
Furniture loan?
No investigations?
Strictly confidential?
Easy rate.
Loan on your furniture?
Loan on your real estate?
Easy rates. No investigation?
No, it don't take long to put you back right where you started. It didn't take long to put me there. Now is a good time for the hero to come in. I'm sorry, mister. No heroes.
So you're home. Your supper's in the stove.
Cold supper. And Ella's face was cold. Colder every day. A man can't be a hero when he's out of a job.
So you're home, huh? I've been waiting for you. I gotta have some dough, Pa. I gotta have it, see? How long do you expect a fella to get along without dough?
Oh, a man can't be a hero without a job. Well, I couldn't blame him. But it was all right. Things would be different as soon as I got a job. Well, maybe this part will be exciting to you like a Hollywood movie story. I came home from walking the streets one day, and I found the house different than it had been for weeks. Ella and Harry's wife, Bertha, having a high time, talking and laughing a mile a minute, while Harry, well, Harry was strutting around like he was king of the pile. What was it all about?
Well, Pa, look me over.
Huh?
I said, look me over. John D. Gutbucks, that's me.
Ah, that's you, all right, Harry.
Well, what is it, son?
Go on, tell him, Harry. Tell him.
Well, Pa, it's this way. I got tired waiting around for you, so I took myself out and got myself a job today. Now, how do you like them apples?
My son with a job. Good. Good. Maybe now...
Go on, Harry. Tell him about the rest of them apples. Go on, tell him.
Yeah. How about taking a guess at where I'm working, Pa?
Well, I don't know what you mean.
You've been out of work so long, you don't even know that when you work, you gotta have a place to work. Sit down, Pa, and hold on to your chair.
But why?
Because the place I'm working is Brown and Company.
Brown?
Yeah, in your own plant. No matter what they told you, they're not laying off, they're putting on.
Brown and Company. No, it wasn't true. It wasn't true. A man works. The job is part of him, and the job is part of the place he works, so the place is part of him. I turned. I went out of the house. I didn't know where I was going, and then I was at the plant.
Now, look, Jim. Jim, you know I'm a busy man. What do you want to go make a disturbance around here for?
Well, I only want...
Now, look here, Jim. How long did you work here?
30 years almost.
All right. All right. That proves what I've been saying. For 30 years, we took care of you. Well, there comes a time when we just can't.
I worked.
You worked and you were paid for it.
But that isn't it. This place. I mean, I was a part... I mean...
Oh, you don't know what you're talking about.
Why did you have to kid me?
Now, Jim...
Saying that you were cutting down the shop, it was just that you didn't want me. That was it, so why didn't you say?
All right, Jim, that's enough. I got plenty to do without listening to you. Getting old in the head or radical or something?
Yeah.
That's your trouble. Getting old in the head.
I went home. Job. Hope of a job, all right. That was endless. Well, I had a good wife and a kid that was waking up at last. Working at a lathe. Well, that was good at least.
I'm tired. Run down to the store and get me a package of cigarettes. Be a good guy.
My son.
Hey, Pa. I was thinking. Now that I'm working, I, you know, ought to start throwing a few parties. You got so much more room here, you know, and you don't need it. How about you taking the upstairs flat and me and Bertha moving down? How about it, Pa?
The days started crawling again.
Now, look here, Pa. Over at the plant, I got talking to some of the boys, and they make plenty taking in boarders. Now, you got an extra room. I mean, you could have if you took your junk out of the front room. Make us a nice little extra cash every week.
Crawling.
All right, Pa, you sign here. Yeah, right here. Bank says that with me having a good job, if you'll turn over everything to me, why, they'll wait on the mortgage. You just leave everything to me, Pa. Sign here. Sign here, right here.
My house. My son.
You do what I say, Pa. You listen to me, Pa. Well, I'm telling you, Pa. That's the way it's going to be, Pa. I'm telling you, Pa. That's the way it's going to be, Pa.
My son. My house. Well, a man's gotta live. So I went on. I didn't listen. I didn't think. Just watching the days crawl. Until...
What's the matter with you, Harry? You're getting old, too.
Now, Bertha, shut up. I don't want to talk no more about it.
I will, too, talk about it. I'll talk about it all I want to talk about it because I got a right to talk about it.
All right, all right.
I waited long enough for you to get a break. I got a right to get everything I can get. You don't see my family hanging around blood-sucking the money out of you, do you?
Oh.
Nor do you? No. My family's got too much self-respect. At least your ma does something for what she gets. I mean, around the house. But he, what good is he? He makes me sick just to look at him. His old droop puss. I tell you, he makes me sick just to look at him.
All right, all right. Keep your voice down.
No, let him hear. When you're done, you're done. And you shouldn't hang around and eat the life out of your kids. Who needs him around here? Do I? Do you? Do you? Do you?
He didn't stick up for me. He didn't...
When you're done, you're done. And you shouldn't hang around and eat the life out of your kids.
All right. No house, no son. All right, get out. I told myself I would. I would. Away from him, away from her, away from the house and town. I had to do it, and yes, I would. And here's where... I'm telling you the truth. The comedy comes in. Yeah, that's what I said. Comedy. Just like in a movie story. Just when you feel the tears start coming out of you, they have something funny happen to make you feel a little better. Yeah, here's the comedy. I went to my wife and I told her what had happened and what I was going to do about it. I said,
We won't be taking much, of course, Ella, but, well, we can send for it. I mean, when we get settled.
Whenever you want it, Jim.
Whenever I want it?
Yes.
Ella.
What do you expect? You think at my age I'm going to start wandering like a gypsy? Living from hand to mouth when all the time I got a house and a son?
But he...
He didn't do nothing to me, did he? I'm his ma. He'll take care of me.
Ella, you're joking.
You think there's any of that left in me?
But you and me, we'll go away.
Where?
Well, does it make any difference?
It makes a difference if I sleep. It makes a difference if I eat. And I sleep here, and I eat here, and I stay here. And that's all there is to it, Jim. That's all there is to it.
Comedy. Just like in a movie story, eh? I had a wife. I had no wife. Well, I guess I fooled you folks long enough. I mean, I started out telling you this story, and all along I said, here comes excitement, blood, villains, heroes, comedy, and, well, it wasn't at all like that. Just the story of a guy, me, 55, who had a job and got too old for it. Well, that's what they said. And then thought he had a wife and a kid and a house. And then found out he didn't have them anymore. But one thing I won't fool you about, the ending. You know, in the movie stuff, the guy gets the girl. Well, I'm too old for that. Or he comes into a lot of money and everybody comes crawling back to him again. Well, that's how two it just don't happen. You know that as well as I do. But there is an ending. And it's just me. Yeah? Me. I'm sitting here in a field. The corn's all cut. And shucks are leaning kind of tired, like I am. But it's a good tired. Yeah. Yeah, I'm on a farm. There's patches of clean snow here and there. And the sky's clean, and so am I, clean of all the worry and the hate and the hurt and all the rest of it. Yesterday, I was walking along the road and I passed the little church down by the river. I just passed by. I'm not the go-to-meeting kind. I just passed. And as I passed, I heard them singing. They'd been singing as I passed, sort of came floating back to me.
And cast their thoughts back to the ground.
Yeah, that's the way it was with me. I'd lost things that were false, too. A wife who was no real wife, a son who was no son, and a house that wasn't a home. I'd lost them. Yeah. I had a wife. I have no wife. I had a son. I have no son. I had a house. I have no house. And so, I'm free. There's your happy ending.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's play, This Precious Freedom, was especially written for radio by Arch Obler and featured Lou Merrill with Elliot Lewis, Kathleen Fitz, Jane Morgan, Al Cameron, and Tom Graham. Next week, a play of the supernatural titled Money, 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 featuring Edmund MacDonald. Arch Obler's plays. A Story in the Night. Arch Obler's plays are presentations of the National Broadcasting Company. Tonight's play came to you from Hollywood's Radio City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
You know, I had the reputation of being very prolific in those days. I was prolific, all right, but also many of the plays were out of the trunk where they had been put when they had been turned down in those early days by the network. I'd had months and months and months of beating on the doors, and so a great deal of the work had already been done in those periods of waiting. Of course, this wasn't true toward the end. And it did become a chore. The hamburger grinder of radio was almost as bad as the hamburger grinder of television. Again and again and again. But one nice thing happened. Although it wasn't done very often, many of my plays were repeated. So that I didn't have to work every blessed week.
After a while, though, it became a shade too much. I was asked to write a motion picture for Bob Taylor and Norma Shearer, and I found the motion picture medium very exciting. You know, I'm not a compulsive doer of anything. I think life has many, many facets. And so there are people who simply can't live unless they're making motion pictures, or can't live unless they're writing, or can't live unless they're making love. I think that these are just parts of life, and I'm saying this because I didn't find it necessary to be on radio to stay alive any more than I find it necessary to make motion pictures to stay alive. Can it be that I have a philosophy that has become more and more rampant these days, that it isn't necessary to show an increasing profit each year to be a human being? As an illustration of the impact radio has and how it gets into your molecules and perhaps your genes, is a man named Mr. Cosby, a comedian. As part of his nightclub routine, and I understand he has a record, he tells how as a little child his mama gave him a radio set to play with and went out and said, "You'll be safe," and lo and behold, through the radio came the sound of a chicken heart growing. That was a play I did with tongue-in-cheek. I'd been in New York, and at the time, the Rockefeller Institute, they were growing a bit of chicken heart in a container. I think the doctor was Corral, and Charles Lindbergh of the First Across the Atlantic had made the artificial pump that put the liquid through to keep the nutrient, to keep this bit of protoplasm alive. Well, theoretically, it was growing at a mathematical progressional stage. In other words, 2, 4, 8, 16, and if they didn't keep it trimmed, it would have gone on and on. And this gave me the idea of the bit of chicken heart that in the lab that gets loose and starts to grow until it covers the world, and all that's left of mankind is an airplane with my two people up in it, and there's no place for them to go. And finally, the gas runs out.
Operator, give me Mr. Regan, fast. Hello, Mr. Regan, this is Lewis. Listen, get me a rewrite, man. The thing's still growing. No, Chief, I tell you the truth. The corridor's choked with living, crawling flesh. No, 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 I'm not drunk. I'm telling you the truth. That little piece of flesh has grown until now. It's jamming that building. All inside the space of an hour. You've got to believe me. It's the greatest news story of the generation, and here you argue with me. I tell you, it's the truth. You've got to believe.
Buddy, you believe me. I tell you, the only hope is to burn the building to the ground at once.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. Wait a minute.
Take it easy. I tell you, burn it to the ground. Burn.
And I tell you, take it easy. I sent in a call.
Oh, don't you understand?
For some reason, I cannot even imagine. This tissue is doubling in size every hour. Do you know what that means? In another hour, it will be twice the size it is now. And long before that, it will break open the building with the force of its pressure. And then it will be free in the street. Do you hear me? Free in the street. And then those tentacles of protoplasm stretching out to feed on anything they can reach. The building. See the walls. Cracking. I warned you.
Gentlemen, come to order, please. Gentlemen, please, quiet, quiet.
mayor, no one realizes more than I do the necessity of immediate action in curbing this unspeakable, unbelievable emergency. And I assure you
that I... Cut the speeches, Mac. That blasted thing is spreading like a forest fire. Call the governor. Get the National Guard out here.
Gentlemen, it was in my institute this horror began. And if you give me a chance, perhaps I can stop it.
What is it, Doctor? Tell us first what that monster really is.
Yes. Yes, I will tell you. That great ever-growing mass of flesh, it is, or it was, a chicken heart.
Chicken heart? Are you crazy, man?
Chicken heart? Please, yes, yes. Chicken heart, I say you. Chicken heart. Listen to me, you fool. Let's have this man.
Somebody up there knows what he's talking about.
I tell you, that mass of flesh was a chicken heart, the tissue of which, for some reason, is undergoing constant, rapid, accelerating growth. With every passing hour, its growth is doubling. Do you know what that means? If it is now one block in size, within 30 hours, that cannibal flesh will have increased in size to one square block to the 30th power. In 30 hours, every inch of this whole city will be crushed under that moving flesh. Within 60 hours, it will have covered the entire state. Within 2 weeks, the entire United States. You ask for the National Guard. I say, call out the entire army. Blast this thing up there.
We'll flood that thing with water from all angles.
All right, here's the signal.
Open them up! Full blast! Chief, look out! That flash is breaking out! Get back, everybody! Everybody, back!
The fools, what good is water? I told them, the only hope is artillery. Bombs.
All National Guardsmen, report to your armories. All National Guardsmen, report to your armories. General mobilization.
Battery in position, sir.
Commence firing on the hour.
Yes, sir.
10, 5, 0.
Commence firing! Fire!
Useless. It has grown too large. And it grows too quickly. The flesh is already engulfing the guns. They came too late.
You all right now, Dr. Alberts?
Yes. Yes, I'm all right, Mr. Lutz. I'm all right.
Well, I sure am glad I located you. I stalled as long as I could, another 10 minutes, and we couldn't take him off. That blasted protoplasm, or whatever it is, was sucking at the wheels by the time we left the ground.
Yes, as I saw.
5,000 feet. Well, we'll cruise around up here for a few minutes and then head west.
It will do no good.
You can't mean it. It must stop growing sometime. It must.
Look at it down there. The gray blankets of evil covering everything. See how the roads are black with men and women and their children running for their lives. See how the protoplasmic gray reaches out and engulfs them. See.
Stop it! Stop talking like that. We'll get away. The government, they'll send bombing planes, poison gas.
No hope. Listen to me, Lewis. You remember only a handful of days ago you asked me my prophecy of the end of the earth? You remember my answer? Oh, such a scholarly prophecy. Cessation of Earth rotation. Mighty-sounding astronomical theories. But now, this is reality, Lewis. The end has come for humanity. Not in the red of atomic fusion. Not in the glory of interstellar combustion. Not in the peace of white, cold silence. But with that creeping, grasping flesh below us. It is a joke, hey, Lewis. A great joke. The joke of the cosmos. The end of mankind.
Why?
Because of a chicken's heart.
No. No, we won't die. I can't die. I'll find a safe landing somewhere. I'll find a place. The motor, it's cut out. We're in a spin. I can't get out of it.
I told you. Doomed.
No.
No!
All mankind, doomed.
No! We're falling right into it, into the heart!
I'm 7 years old, standing up in my crib. Falling out of the crib. I really, you know, I mean, they gave me a bed, but I kept falling out of it. And I'm standing up there. My parents are going out, see? And they're just walking back and forth. We live in an apartment building. It's only one bathroom. And there's my bedroom and my parents' bedroom. And they have to pass by my bedroom in order to get to the bathroom. And if the door's open, I can see them. And I know they're going out because they keep bumping into each other, you know. Boom, damn, boom, get out of the way. Boom, where's my sock? I don't wear them, you know. So, this is before babysitters, when parents did not believe in babysitters at all, you know. The philosophy was, what? Let some stranger look after my kid? I'd just as soon leave him home by himself. So, I'm standing up here. I got my sleepers on. I wore sleepers till I was 12. I love sleepers because I used to put mashed potatoes in the bottom of my sleepers and make my mother feel them. Mom, Bill's a dead rat, she'd faint. My mom would faint for anything, man. I used to get hit in the head with a rock and cover up the blood. She couldn't stand blood for nothing, man. I'd go home, stand right behind her. She was cooking. Mom, look, blood. So I'm standing up in the crib and they both come up, you know. And now the whole thing to them is that they have to scare me to make me stay in the bed, see. They tell you some kind of a lie. That's what the parents used to do. There's a green monster out the door. If you get out of that bed, he'll eat you right up, you know. So, I'm a con man. I really am. I'm a good con man. Boy, I never went to school if I didn't want to. My whole thing was so beautiful. My mother used to come in, boom, open the door, and I'd be in the bed, you know. And she'd say, aren't you going to school? And I say, Mother, is that you? Just bring your face here so I can touch it before I leave. Yeah. Never went to school one day. And always got out at 3:30 to play. Used to go up to her. 3:30.
I'm here for her! I'm well!
You're not well, get back in the bed.
Honest to goodness, Mom! A little angel came right up on my bed, hit me with a wand, plain, said, go out and play.
And she had to believe the angel. I knew that. So anyway, I'm standing in my crib. And I said, now don't get out of the crib, please. See, my father, I love my father's approach. It was basic. Stay in the bed. That's all. You know, stay in the bed, see? I knew how to answer him. I will. And that was it. You know, he'd go, and then I'd jump out of the crib, you know. Papa's beautiful, but mothers, they give you a half out.
Stay in the crib because your life is important to this and that. Oh, yes, I've heard it before.
But my old man would just come up, stay in the bed. Right, Dad. And he'd leave. He said his piece, you know. So now my mother comes in. I don't get out of the crib. Yes, Mother. I'm tired anyway. I'm going to sleep. The Sandman's beating me to death. And I'm so tired. Pardon me for not seeing you to the door, but I'm tired. I'm telling you right now, don't get out of that crib. Now, the last time you got out of the crib, you went in and listened to that radio and heard that awful Lights Out program, and it scared you so bad that you smeared Jell-O all over the kitchen floor to make the monster slip if he came at you. And your father went into the kitchen to get a drink of water, slipped and hurt himself. Now, to make sure you don't get out of this crib, we've placed over 100 black poisonous snakes around your crib.
you so much as put a toe out there, they're going to bite you. You're going to swell up and be dead until morning. I don't see no snakes. They're invisible. And she left. Boy, I'm telling you right now, I'm so sick of this place, I'm going to run away from home. They're always putting black snakes.
Snakes! You get out of here! This is not your room, this is my room, and you just get out of here! I don't care who sent you there, this is my room. I didn't ask you to come in here, nasty snake! Snakes, do you hear me talking to you? Snakes! I gotta go to the bathroom! Snakes! Now, don't you bite! Don't you bite me! I'm gonna put my toe out there. Don't bite it. Just give it a little snaky lick. Come on. Okay. Listen. You can bite it just a little bit, but don't put none of your juice in it. Nothing. Well, go ahead. I bet you're not even mad. Go and fight it, suckers. Yeah, I know you wasn't out there. Lie to me, boy. I'm going to listen to the radio. We had a Philco radio. It was about 6 feet tall. It had 287 knobs on it, of which only two worked. Off on volume and the station selector. The extra knobs were if you'd lose one, you could replace them right away. You don't have to go to the store. And I love to get scared to death. Anything that'd scare me to death, I loved it. I loved Frankenstein, a Wolfman, and a mummy so much. I used to sit right up front. And then they would come at me, and I would squish myself into the orchestra pit. I hid all over the place. I'm telling you, I had pictures of them all over my house. Never looked at them. Was scared of them. There were three programs that were scary. One was suspense. That wasn't too scary. That was suspenseful. Then there was Inner Sanctum, where the guy played the organ. And then he would come in, good evening, and he was so happy to scare you to death. And he opened that door. And then he told you a weird story about his uncle Harry, who had lost his hip bone or something like that. But what really scared me was when he closed the door. At the end of I knew somebody was in the house then. And I started smearing that jello. No monster gonna get near me with that jello on the floor. I've tripped up many a monster with that jello on the floor. History Bob. And now, then my radio, I turn it on. You gotta wait, maybe. Maybe 8 days. Put the heat up, you know, 8 days. Same again. And then I'm there's good news. Slave Bob. Good evening.
That's the guy.
Go ahead, scare me to death. I'm ready. I'm ready. Scare me, man. Come on now. Dumb enough to do whatever the guy said to do on the radio. Turn your lights out. Yeah. They're out. Go on, scare me to death. I'm ready. Tonight's episode is about a chicken heart. A chicken heart that ate up New York City. Yeah, go chicken heart. Go. Go get him. Eat him up, chicken heart. Scare me to death. I'm ready. Chicken heart was kept alive in a laboratory in a vat. Special solution. Half blood, half sodium solution.
just janitor. Knock that over. He went to get a rag to clean it up. The chicken heart grew. 6 foot 5 inches. And in search of human blood. The janitor came back, opened the door. The heart ate him up. Go get him, Chicken Heart. Go get him. Go get him. Into the hallway. Rang for the elevator.
Fourth floor.
Go get him, Chicken Heart. Go get him. You're there. Moved out into the street. Ate up all the cabs. Beep, beep. The Empire State Building. Ate up the Jersey Turnpike. It's in your home state. It's outside of your door. And it's going to eat you up. Whether he knew him or not, would call him in.
Hey, come in. I want to show you my dumb kid. Oh, and tell him how you burned up $100 sofa and broke your father's arm to save us from that.
Cosby tells it very amusingly. If you're listening, Mr. Cosby, I'm the fellow who actually wrote it, and if you drop me a letter, I'll send you a piece of the original Chicken Heart. I'm still growing it in my backyard. It's getting to look more and more like you, Mr. Cosby.
Reminiscing, I feel you near. Once more, you're my love of yesteryear.
With us next week for another nostalgic look at radio of yesteryear.
And now it's just about time we were picking up our memories and moving along our way. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these songs and the memories that go with them as much as I've enjoyed bringing them to you. And I'll be keeping my weather eye peeled. Yes, sir. Looking for you all to join us the next time we drop around this way for a friendly little get-together. And I hope that'll be real soon, folks. And until then, visit your old friend Singin' Sam, saying goodbye for now.
Same time, same station, is produced for KRLA News and Public Affairs by John Price. Associate producer, Cam Currier. Special research by Martin Halperin. This Precious Freedom was originally broadcast on NBC December the 13th of 1939. Chicken Heart is contained in the Arch Obler Capitol album entitled Drop Dead. Bill Cosby's material is from his Warner album, Wonderfulness. Next week, the final part of our Obler Omnibus.
I know you won't want to miss it, so be sure to be with us next week at this same time, same station.